Chinese manufacturing has a lot of challenges. Bribery, fraud, quality problems are very high. So today we talk to the founder of Movly, who is going to shed a little bit of light on this. This is actually one of the probably the most transparent interviews we've ever conducted with direct boots on the ground descriptions of what goes wrong when manufacturing out of China. So I think you'll find it intriguing. And my co-host here, Hunter, who joined me for this intro, would like you to know you're subscribed to the My Amazon Guy podcast. This is the My Amazon Guy podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Pope, founder of the agency My Amazon Guy. Tune in each week to learn how to grow your Amazon sales. So I'm now joined by Sajug. Thanks so much for coming on the My Amazon Guy podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
So of course, we're talking inspections today, fraud, bribery, Chinese manufacturing, the gauntlet. So super excited. Before we do that, let's talk a little bit about your backstory and let us know, you know, kind of how you got where you are today.
Yeah, that's a great, great question. So I actually started off just flipping things on eBay. That's actually how I got started with e-commerce. So I was selling on eBay. And from there, I actually moved into Amazon because I was like, wow, you know, I'm selling all this junk. I could probably make stuff that's a lot better and it's probably going to be more reliable as a source of income versus, you know, just flipping random products I find on eBay. So I went into Amazon and actually started my own brand. And that was about 5-6 years ago, pretty quickly. So our first year, we did about 40K. Second year, we did 1 million. And our third year, we were on track to do about 2 million a year.
That's some good growth. Congratulations on that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. And third year, we weren't as lucky as the first 2 years, because what ended up happening is the end of year two into year three, we started having a lot of quality control problems. We were seeing 5-10% defect rates in some of our products on order. And then we were also seeing other issues, like almost 100% failure rates on some SKUs after a few months of use. And these were SKUs that we gave, you know, 1-2 year warranties on. So like, it was pretty ridiculous having like almost all of our buyers come back after a few months and saying, hey, the product's breaking. And a lot of them being durable products as well. So I ended up actually moving to Shenzhen, China, and I lived there for 6 months on the second to third year of the company, and was doing my own inspections on the factory floor, 12 to 16 hours a day, basically checking my products, trying to figure out some issues. You know, we had suppliers that we worked with for 2 years, all of a sudden having quality control problems, and other suppliers that we just worked with a few orders also having quality control problems, and ended up kind of learning how my products were made, how they were manufactured. Just hung out at the factory every day for those 6 months. And at one point, I actually watched my inspectors botch up one of my inspections for one of my orders when I asked them to come while I was at the factory.
Wow. And how'd that happen?
So I was always kind of curious, like, what does an inspector do when they get to the factory? And so I actually went ahead and did my own inspection for one of my orders, like I was doing when I was there. And it took me about 9 hours. And at the end of the 9 hours, I was like, all right, you know what? This probably would have taken a normal inspector maybe 10, 11, 12 hours. They don't know the product as well as me. And, you know, I got about a 6% defect rate doing everything that I told the inspector to do. Then I was like, all right, you know, we're getting past inspections. So why is this happening? So went ahead and called my inspection company to come about 2 days later. I came to the factory. Inspector showed up around, or he was supposed to show up around 9 or 10 a.m. Showed up around 2 p.m. in the afternoon, so almost 5 hours late to an 8-hour inspection. And the inspection company told me this can be done in 8 hours, even though I was like, okay, this is probably going to take 11, 12 hours. Like, this guy's going to be overtime, like pretty deep. And he showed up 5 hours late to an 8-hour inspection and then proceeded to ask the factory for lunch. He said, if you don't give me lunch, I'm not going to start the inspection.
Which is
completely ridiculous.
Completely and professional and best in service. Yeah.
Exactly. And I was like, I was pissed off. Like the factory rep was like trying to calm me down. He was like, yeah, don't worry about it. Let him go. And we'll just get him lunch. It's a common thing. And I was like, all right, whatever. And they went ahead and bought him lunch. It was like 20 RMB, you know, like $3. And he ate his lunch and then proceeded to do the entire inspection in about 2 to 3 hours, basically just visually checking the products. We asked him to do some tests that we told him to do on each one of the units. He did on maybe 2 to 3 units, took some photos, took some documentation. And then when we got the report the next day, lo and behold, passed inspection. And if he had done the tests on all the products like he was supposed to do and done a thorough job instead of just, you know, breezing through them, we would have got a failed inspection for that order.
That sounds ridiculous. Like, That is. I can see why you were frustrated into trying to solve this problem.
Yeah, and it actually gets worse. So after that, I ended up opening my own office in Nanshan. That's a province of, or like a part of Shenzhen. And we had a couple of full-time people there, including a general manager. And what ended up happening is we started using them for inspections, our own in-house team for inspections. And the in-house team started forming really close relationships with our suppliers and then started to take bribes from our suppliers.
Nice.
And yeah. So
nice.
Icing on the cake, right?
So, the Chinese way.
Yeah. So we were, it wasn't fun to say the least. So that company ended up, because of that, you know, we ate up this giant overhead to hire full-time people in China, open up this office. We opened up what's called a WFOE. It's a wholly foreign-owned entity in China. Super hard and super expensive to operate. And we opened all this stuff up. Then we had, you know, a bunch of fraud. We had a bunch of bribes. So we were having problems with our in-house team, out-of-house team, third parties. So, and quality control at the, you know, end of it, you know, with products breaking after a few months of use. And this was on a product that had a 5-month lead time. So it was only sustainable for so long. So what ended up happening is we had to actually shut down the whole brand on year three, just because of all the quality control problems. And that's when I got into Movly and what we do right now, where I started consulting with a lot of different brands and manufacturing in China, things like that, kind of trying to share my experience. And what ended up happening is no matter how good we could be as consultants, at the end of the day, we were still dependent on all the service providers and all the people operating in the supply chain, which we had no control, no visibility, no transparency on. And a lot of our customers were coming to us with defective products. And even if we put together good inspection checklists, things like that, it's effectively meaningless because there's no proper inspections happening. So that's when we actually moved up and pivoted over to quality control inspections entirely. And that was about a year and a half ago. And we've just been focused on that and innovating and trying to bring tech to that and trying to just make inspections as effective as possible.
So I wouldn't normally bring in just a random inspections company onto my podcast, but the reason why I thought you'd be a great interview is because of you specifically, former 7-figure Amazon seller. So you get it, right? And so not only do you understand what Amazon sellers go through, you lived it. You like literally were there watching the fraud, watching the ineptitude of inspectors, right? And you went out and solved the problem like a true entrepreneur. So mad props. And I have high respect for what you've gone and done.
Appreciate that.
So a lot of people are probably still like, why do I need to do inspections, right? Especially after what you just mentioned. And they're like, well, if you do inspections, it's really, you know, you gotta watch the inspector. Now, obviously, a reputation company like yourself, you can show that transparency and solve it. But before we go there, talk to me about why somebody would even want to get an inspection to begin with.
Yeah, it's a really good question. So when it comes down to inspections, we actually did a calculation and we took about $3,000 of defective goods. It's a pretty small order. I mean, most sellers are going to do a $3,000 order on the first order or greater than that. And people who are doing, you know, 7 figures or above, you know, we're talking like 40, 50K orders. But if you just have $3,000 and an order, that's enough to pay for 10 inspections. And when you factor in all the other costs, product costs, freight costs, packaging costs, shipping to the customer, FBA fees, return administration fees, customer support costs for warranty replacements, things like that.
And poor reviews, I'll add to your list.
Yeah. Actually, we didn't even calculate poor reviews in this calculation just because it's not like an exact figure, like re-ranking your products.
Relative science, for sure.
Exactly. So we didn't even include that. If you include that, it's even more than this. But just including the hard numbers, that pays for your inspections for 7 years if you do them quarterly. So just, you know, one bad order, that's all it takes. So just $3,000 and 7 years of inspections are paid. And that bad order, it can happen on the first order. It can happen on the second order. It can happen on the 25th order. Like, I was working with my suppliers for 2 years. And then all of a sudden we started having quality control problems. And other suppliers, it's more of a consistent degrade or order to order. So it just really depends on the supplier and the product. But like when you do hit that one bad order, you know, even 2 years down the line, it pays for everything for decades.
So I think it really does go to show that inspections are a necessary part of the process. So can you talk to me a little bit about culture, perhaps? Like why is manufacturing potentially degrading even when you have a good relationship? Is it because they're constantly cost cutting and cutting quarters, or what's the root cause in your opinion?
Yeah, so that actually plays into fraud and bribery and how we look at it as well, this perspective. But in the case of like suppliers to, you know, relationships with you, A lot of times it falls into two buckets of categories. First of all, you know, as you were saying, you know, you don't bring on a lot of inspection companies because they don't really get how selling on Amazon is. And that's the same thing with your suppliers. You know, even if they sell on Amazon themselves or they don't get what it is like to run your brand, to deal with the customers and deal with the problems and see those negative reviews hitting your sales, things like that. So when they don't have that holistic perspective, it's just a simple game. And it's like a two little games going on, if you're a big fan of game theory. So there's like one game going on.
I love game theory, by the way. So let's talk game theory. So you mentioned zero sum potential game theory as well. By the way, I played World of Warcraft, right? Like, I'm a total nerd. So please continue.
Got you. Awesome. Yeah. So, you know, the supplier has a incentive to essentially produce the cheapest product that you're going to buy. And so, you know, they choose quality six, which is the highest quality, then, you know, their profit might be one. But if they choose quality one, their profit might be five. So they have an incentive to maximize their profit by simply, you know, selling the cheapest product that you will buy. And as long as you keep buying the products and buying the orders, and they don't understand the holistic perspective of what happens, what goes wrong, then they're just going to keep going down and down and down that number until they hit that threshold where you're like, hey, this is too bad. Then they'll fix it. And then they'll say, okay, hey, you know, you won't accept order number one quality, but we'll fix it up. We'll get it to number two and we'll sell you that from now on. So it's just a constant degrade. And then on your end, your incentive is to produce the highest quality product because you're a brand and your profits are maximized when you have a higher quality product. So it's kind of two opposing forces at the same
Definitely
time.
Definitely some friction.
Exactly. And they don't have a holistic idea. They've not been in your seat running your business. They have no idea what it's like to deal with those kind of problems and deal with those issues. And that's kind of the reason that, you know, suppliers generally don't care about the quality. It's the same thing. So we actually, when the COVID pandemic hit, we actually had a supplier that produced KN95 masks. And we were asked by a hospital group to inspect about 20,000 KN95 masks. This was from a class two medical grade FDA cleared facility. So this was a facility that was cleared for medical grade KN95.
You would have high expectations going in, but I suspect they didn't meet that.
Yeah. So we actually did an inspection and about 7% of the product, 7 to 10%, I don't remember the exact number, had holes in the masks. And
that's a crazy high amount. Oh my gosh.
And, you know, the suppliers, we told them, hey, this is going to a hospital group. And, you know, suppliers did not really understand, okay, hey, you know, this is a hospital group that's going to send this with COVID positive patients. So they just didn't care about the quality. They're like, if you don't buy this, someone else is going to buy this. So, you know, it's kind of the same thing there. Like they have an incentive to produce the lowest quality product as long as it sells. And that's what it comes down to. They can meet their production capacity. They can continue selling products and they don't have to deal with higher quality. They can maximize their profit. Then they'll go with another customer.
That's really sad to think about, right? There's lives on the line here, potentially thousands of lives, you know, impacted by some really terrible decision-making.
Yeah.
The short-sightedness, which you have impacted incredibly well on our podcast so far, why can't the suppliers realize that if they had a higher quality product that they'd get repeat business? Is it because if person A doesn't buy it, person B will buy it, like you had mentioned, or do they not respect that relationship, I guess?
Yeah, so I definitely think there's a respect for the relationship, but it also comes down to volume. So a lot of, you know, FBA sellers, you know, you might be doing a few thousand, you know, units a month, which is a ton of revenue. You might be doing, you know, seven figures of revenue, 80K a month on one product. That's a ton of revenue. But for the supplier that produces this for 400,000 units a month, your 5,000 units is like a, you know, like a little ball in the park, you know, it's a piece of grass in the park. So they value the relationship. They want to grow. But at the same time, you know, if you don't set expectations clearly up front, you don't give them a perspective. Like I feel like a lot of sellers also approach manufacturers from a perspective of like, it's transactional. So they're just like, hey, you know, we have this product, build this product, things like that. They don't look at it like a partnership. Like I've talked to a lot of people and some of the best people that have, you know, the highest quality products, they have really strong relationships with the factories. And relationship doesn't mean, you know, don't do inspections because that's your security. But at the same time, you know, relationship means like, hey, I'm sending family photos back and forth and we have like a good relation. We're talking about holidays. We're talking about Thanksgiving, things like that. And once you have a very strong relationship and you treat your suppliers like partners, that makes a huge difference if you don't make it transactional.
It seems to me like the suppliers would respect what you inspect. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's the game, right? So if they know you don't know how to play the game, and the game, you know, every major manufacturer, every major company does inspections on every order. It's actually built into like standardized industry processes. So like if you're not doing inspections, you're not doing audits, and you don't know the game, and you come across to a factory like you don't know the game, then they're going to be like, okay, this guy doesn't, you know the game on sales either. So how, you know, what's my guarantee this guy's going to sell? So, you know, I'm going to play my side of the game, and you know, this guy is going to play his side of the game, and you know, you'll end up with a higher, lower quality product at the end of it if you're not playing your game right.
So inspections in China, do you guys do inspections outside of China?
So we're looking into doing that right now, like India, Vietnam, but right now it's just China specifically.
Got it. So, all right. So I see manufacturing pop up in other locations. Do you have any knowledge or insight into like what's going on in Vietnam and India that you could shed light on just briefly?
Yeah, definitely. So not too much information because we're not on the ground yet. But like in India, we're seeing a lot of people move over to India, especially for handmade items, for like apparel products, things like that. A lot of like smaller end products or more customized products. We're seeing a lot of manufacturing moving over to India, and that's been really, really coming on fire. Vietnam, Taiwan, a lot of these other countries, what we've seen is that Chinese factories are actually building supplemental plants in those countries. So you might find exactly to get like a, you know, a little bit of insurance, you know, against the trade war, things like that. So there are a lot of times like we've been reached, you know, we've contacted Chinese factories. I have, you know, for my time running my business, I have a ton of Chinese factories contacting me out all the time. And I've seen a lot of updates where essentially Chinese factories have started building, you know, new plants in Taiwan. And they'll actually tell you as a client, you know, hey, you can have these products produced in Taiwan, and this is your price, and this is the plant it'll be produced in, or you can have them produced in our China facility. And you actually have a choice between like which one you want to go with.
Interesting. That is actually pretty compelling. That's smart on their side.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So I got a couple of questions to help me understand. So this is kind of like an economic outlook question. So because you see like the orders before, like you can see the future, right? Like 6 to 12 months in advance, like, you know, what items are being produced, what's in high demand. Is there anything that you know, could speak generically on? Cause obviously I don't want you to, you know, cross any NDAs or anything like that, but like, what do you see that's like, obviously besides like face masks, that was, everybody could guess that one, but like, what's in high demand right now, or where do you see manufacturing pivoting to at the moment?
Yeah, so I don't think we don't have like data analytics for those kind of trends right now. Sure, so sure. It's hard to kind of gauge that. But in a general sense, we have been seeing, you know, people like work from home products like increase in volumes spectacularly. And obviously, you know, face masks, things like that, COVID pandemic year. But what we've also seen is that some brands are actually starting into manufacturing things post-COVID, because now we have like a vaccine timeline. We just had Fosse say, you know, hey, we're going to have full, you know, NFL stadiums by September. So, you know, we see a lot of companies now focusing on prepping. Like brands. Exactly. Because like travel, for example, anything post-COVID, like after, you know, one year, 1.5 years of no traveling, you're never going to look at traveling the same. It's always going to be like a much higher value to you for the next 40 years. And for the next few years alone, that travel is going to be worth
a lot. It's a good takeaway. And I wouldn't have thought about it that way, right? Yeah. Like the value that we're going to place on travel is going to be higher. That's a really good takeaway.
Exactly. And when the value on travel is higher, the sales for travel are going to be inflated significantly over the next few months or next few years. It's not going to be like a one-year trend like COVID. It's going to be like a 2, 3, 4, 5-year trend. Might balance out after like 5, 6, 7 years. But it's going to be a long time, because like just for me, for example, I'm never going to value travel the same now. I'm always going to give it like a huge value. Like after COVID ends, I'm going to be traveling nonstop for a year at least, just because, you know, I need to get it all out of my system.
There's a few of us that could probably relate to that. Yeah. Everybody talked about the toilet paper shortage, but nobody really talked about the webcam work from home shortage, right? So like, have you seen some of these goods stabilize yet, like the work from home products, or do you still think it's an overdrive still?
So I think a lot of the production has stabilized more so. And, you know, we are seeing more stabilized orders, things like that. The lead times have gotten a little bit better and more predictable. But for the most part, you know, I think it has stabilized quite a bit, and especially with the vaccine coming out, it's going to stabilize a lot more. But it's really hard to tell because we just don't have all the data from, you know, the customer side and also from the manufacturing side. We don't collect all the data from, you know, start to finish.
Got it. Okay, well, that makes sense. All right, so pivoting away from the economic standpoint, but by the way, I thought that was really insightful, really incredibly insightful, because people who are always looking for like that next product, right? You have people who are trying to follow trends and they look at Alibaba and they go to the conferences. Do you have any tips on that front? Like, is there anything that people should be doing that maybe they're not commonly doing to figure out like what to go develop?
Yeah. So when it comes down to product sourcing, I think one of the key things that I always like to say is that when you're actually sourcing a product, a lot of people make the misconception of just depending on the supplier's sample to actually determine which supplier you want to go with. And what I always recommend doing actually is in the sales process, when you're talking to 10, 15 other suppliers, actually talk with them and ask them, what do you do for your quality control? What machines do you have in your factory? How do you produce these products? And ask them about what quality control checkpoints they have and, you know, what machines, what checks they do on their products to make sure that they're good. And I think that's a really common thing that a lot of people avoid. And there's actually a huge advantage to doing that in the sales process because everybody's trying to sell you. They're all trying to get you to work with their factory. And you can aggregate data from like 10 different suppliers and say, hey, you know, this supplier does these checks, this supplier does these checks, all these suppliers do these checks. And then you can aggregate all that information and whichever supplier you work with, then you have like a whole checklist, specifications, everything. You know your product and how it's produced, how it's tested. And you have that intel that you can then use for your inspections. You can use it for customer reviews, for gauging the problems, and really building a really high-end, high-quality product, you know, whether it's a paper cup or all the way down to electronics.
Let's go nitty-gritty on product inspections. And then I want to talk entrepreneurship. So nitty-gritty first on give me like one or two tips that somebody could take away today and start implementing into their inspections process.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the first one I would say is product tests. So most people, when they work with inspection companies, and most inspection companies do this, where they just ask you for some really basic information, and then they go to your factory and basically do what's called a workmanship inspection, which is the same thing as a visual inspection. So they're just checking your products and they're like, wow, you know, your products look good. You know, if you have a lamp, all your lamps can be defective, but they look good. So you have a passed inspection. So it's kind of ridiculous. And a lot of people think, okay, hey, you know, I don't have electronics product. I don't have something super complex, but it applies also to the most basic products. Like you have a paper cup, you want to fill it with water because every product has a function. You know, I want to make sure my product is not leaking. If you have a shelf, you want to make sure the shelf has a weight limit, you know, all the way down from the really simple products, all the way down to the complex products. Every product has a test or something like that that you can do to make sure the product is tested properly. So understanding what those tests are, like kind of what I mentioned, talking with the sales agents, really understanding that process, and then building that into the inspection specification is really key, because most of the times a visual inspection, unless you're just looking for visual things, it's just a visually, you know, it's like a product you just leave on the shelf and it's completely visual, then you know, it might be a little bit different. But for every other product, there is tests, there are checks that you want to do, and you want to do them on the entire sample size that you're testing for inspections, because that is what is going to make sure that your inspection, you know, gets relatively correct results. You know, that pass is not going to come back if the product is actually bad quality, if you have proper instructions.
I think that's a great tip. One time I did not do an inspection and they put a misspelled word on one of my wine glasses. So, and printed 1,000 of them. So yeah. I think inspections could pay for themselves, and you got to know what you look for. So beyond just the visual element, actually physically product testing it. So if you've got a paper cup, fill up that water. That makes sense. So thank you for that observation. So let's talk one more tip though. What's another tip somebody could use inspection wise? What should they be doing besides product testing?
Yeah, I think the second biggest tip I would say when it comes to inspections is actually iterating. So a lot of people have this misconception that inspections are just a one-off thing. So like, okay, hey, you know, I get the specification, I put together a checklist, and then I, you know, do an inspection and that's it. And then next order, I do another inspection, whatever, and it's the same spec. And what I always like to do, and this is like maybe a little bit tricky to implement, it's not hard, it just might seem a little hard, but essentially all you have to do is talk with your customer support team and have like a spreadsheet for every product. So anytime you have a defect or return, you can log those concerns on that product. Like, hey, these are how many inquiries we had of this concern, of this concern, of this concern. Like, hey, my product broke after 2 months. Hey, my product is defective on arrival, things like that. So you can understand what are the problems your customers are facing, and then use that to iterate and change your inspection guidelines every inspection. So if you start seeing a lot of problems in a certain area, ramp that up on your testing and maybe find a new test to test for that. So if your shelf is breaking really quickly, have a maybe a higher weight test or put in a weight test to make sure that, hey, my shelf is still going to survive whatever weight is required, or if, even a little bit more than that, because, you know, it should be built over the spec. So things like that are super, super important to actually be able to gauge, okay, you know, hey, is my product improving or is my product, you know, having problems? So as you get feedback from the customers, good feedback, bad feedback, recycle that in, have a little bit of a feedback loop and take that back to your supply chain to make sure you're properly inspecting your products and improving that every inspection.
Great. So I think those are very actionable insights. So you mentioned you live in China and clearly you went from Amazon seller to running a large inspection company. And there's a drive that I can just in the voice of the words that you're using, you're like, man, I just want to make things better for other people, right? Like that's a true entrepreneur. You solve a problem and you make money on it. Love it. What drives you to do that?
That's a great question. So I guess, so when I was starting my brand, right, and I was going through the whole process, it was a complete pain. You know, I was not able to sleep at night. I was working till 2, 3, 4 a.m. in the night. I had to move to China and kind of drop everything and live there for 6 months and then still get screwed over several times.
That is a brutal, brutal process. And you paid your tax, sir.
Exactly. And, you know, I was just sick of it. And I was like, you know, this is just complete nonsense. We have a lot of technology. We can improve this entire process. And it's really not that difficult. You know, it's just that these other companies are just not iterating. They're not changing. They're not moving. Like one of the things, Stephen, we should touch on is actually the fraud and bribery game. I don't think I touched on that, but that's a really good thing we should talk about.
Tie it into the entrepreneur drive. Feel free.
Yeah, definitely. So like, I feel like when it comes to fraud and bribery in China, like a lot of people think it's a zero sum game. And that's what makes it so tricky. You know, you have these software companies trying to fix inspections and these other industries. You also have these service companies, but they don't really look at it from the perspective of human. So supply chain just comes down to the human element. And that's what's really key. So you have a human element, but the inspections, that's the inspector. You know, they need to have passion to do a good inspection. They also need to, you know, they need to be enabled to do a good inspection, you know, by management. And what I've actually seen, so a lot of people have this misconception that fraud and bribery is zero sum. You give 25, you get 25, it's a bribe. And I'll actually give you a story. So I actually went down to the local foot doctor here when the pandemic started. So I wasn't working out for a couple of months, so my feet were hurting a little bit. I was getting a little bit of shin pain. I have flat feet. So went to the foot doctor and asked him. And the first time I met him, we had a good conversation. He introduced himself. I just talked a little bit about myself. He had a good conversation. At the end of the conversation, he was like, you know, I really like you. You're a cool guy. And I was like, yeah, same. And then he was like, all right, you know what you need is you need some orthotics. He went to the back, got a $50 pair of orthotics and he gave it to me. He's like, okay, try these on. And I was like, okay, cool. Try them on. I walked around. He's like, okay, cool. It fits. And I was like, oh, awesome. Like, how much are these? Like, I'll get these checked out. He's like, yeah, don't worry about it. I'm going to give it to you for free. And I was like, oh, okay, awesome. Well, thank you. And then 2 minutes later, he walks in with a nurse and he's like, okay, Cedric, I'm going to need you to follow this nurse out because she's going to take you out the back entrance because they don't like me giving away shit for free. And just tuck that by your side. And I was like, oh, you know, like just orthotics, like I'll pay for them. It's not a big deal. He's like, no. I insist. I'm not going to walk out of here without orthotics. You know, you're a young guy. What's an extra $50 to this billion-dollar hospital group? And that's the way he looked at it. And that's the same thing that happens when you go like an inspector and you're in China. So inspector goes to the factory, they talk with the factory rep. Factory rep is super nice. They buy them lunch, they treat them super nicely, help them throughout the inspection. Then at the end of the inspection, they're like, hey, inspector, I know this inspection is going to fail by 5%, but if it fails, I'm going to lose my job. And the inspector might think, okay, hey, what's an extra 5% of defects for this billion-dollar company that's hiring me from America or whatever, you know, Americans, your UK, whatever country you say, you know, the first thing that comes into their minds is like, oh, you're rich kind of thing, right? So it's like, oh, you know, what's the impact of them? They're going to lose a few extra dollars. But this guy here locally, he's going to lose their job. So I'd rather just pass this inspection or just lower the defect so it's almost a pass. That way this guy does not lose his job. And that's when they take a bribe. They're almost like honest thieves. Like that's kind of the term.
Interesting. Honest thieves. Well, I've been writing down like what I think the biggest takeaways of our pod is. And I wrote down the supply chain comes down to the human element, which you just impacted. And it's like honest thieves. Interesting.
Yeah. So what, like, for example, like what I try to do is with all the inspector trainings and things like that, what we try to do is we actually add in on the inspector trainings that, hey, you know, the sellers you're working with, they might be making hundreds of millions in sales every year. But we also work with a ton of sellers that are just individuals and you're not going to know which is which. And if it is an individual, Like, these are people who have borrowed money from their friends, their family, their parents, you know, sold their car, sold their house to fund this business. And when you pass an order, even by 1% to 2% defect rate, that's enough for sometimes the entire order to be unsellable or for the order to be rejected. And you're not impacting a $1 billion company, which is losing a few dollars. You're impacting an individual who depends on this for their bread and butter. And it's like an individual just like yourself. So we've seen that like dramatically increase the passion and the pride that our inspectors take in their work. Then we also enable them on a management standpoint by making sure they have enough time to do that inspection. So they never are in a situation where they have 8 hours to do a 12-hour inspection. Because, you know, if the management doesn't care about the inspection, then why should the inspector care? So it's kind of the same thing. So my whole takeaway with that is that it's a very human element thing. And a lot of people miss that. And that's where I kind of saw, like, you know, also like for me as an individual, right? Like, I'm an entrepreneur. I've always been an entrepreneur. And, you know, I always want to build things. I want to grow things. And I saw a huge opportunity to make a huge impact on an industry that really needs it, which is like small businesses, mid-sized companies. You know, Amazon sellers doing everything from $0 of sales, you know, just starting up, all the way to hundreds of millions of dollars. There's like a huge target there. And it's not just Amazon sellers, it's Shopify, it's all these people. And, you know, similar to them, you know, everybody has dreams, right? Everybody's trying to build their brand. They're trying to get everything going. And frankly, you know, this is the most difficult part in that entire process outside of the product selection and building the brand. Like, this is, you know, the whole thing that's running your entire business. And it's literally something you can't even depend on to sleep a full night of sleep on. So that's what concerned me so much. And I was like, all right, hey, you know, so I understand the impacts these can have. I understand, you know, what can happen here. I'm not going to be the smartest person in the room, but I at least have the right perspective. I feel that I can fix a lot of these issues. So I kind of felt like it's almost like my duty. So as you know, I can get into another project, I can, you know, work on another business, but like, just for me, like just the amount of impact that I can make with this business is so like motivating. That's actually what pushes me to just continually improve and iterate on Mavli.
I think it's a great marriage when the entrepreneurship can be in the right space at the same time, right? Like, you know, well said on the articulation there, just being able to go in there and really make a difference. I think it's empowering. A lot of times people are like, oh, I just sell wine glasses. I'm not curing babies. But at the end of the day, like the service, how many jobs are impacted by this? How many people are employed? And kind of like what you've been repeatedly impacting on our pod today is the human element is not, there is so many people involved on getting something from position A to position B, a clear across the globe, whether it's from China to the US or anywhere in between. It makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. And actually one thing I would like to add, which is really interesting, is that a lot of our staff actually found us and worked with us to build up Mavli after being fired or shutting down their own companies. Like, we spoke to a copywriter that we're looking to hire. He had ran through the same situation that I did, you know, maybe not like as intense, but you know, his business shut down. Our previous
hard to find a good copywriter.
Exactly. It's definitely hard. We've been searching. And we like marketing, for example, we hired somebody in sales a few a year back or so. He actually found us also because he was fired from a previous startup that he worked with because the startup had to shut down because of bad quality products and manufacturing issues. So a lot of our staff actually came from backgrounds that were impacted by things
quality. Good for you guys. All right. So as we wrap up the pod, I want to make sure we plug your service here. So if somebody wants to hire, is it pronounced Mavli?
Yeah, Mavli.
Yeah. So if somebody wants to make a purchase for an inspection from you guys, where can they go? And go ahead and spell it out.
Yeah, definitely. So you can just find us at mavli.com. That's MOVLEY.com. And we have some pretty awesome resources there. We're working on building that up. And you can also, whenever you're ready to book an inspection, just hit the get started form, fill out your info. And what we usually do is we jump on an intro call, which is like 15 minutes long, just answer your questions, kind of get you all situated. And then our entire back office is actually based out of the Philippines. So that's who you work with on a day-to-day basis. So completely native English communications, they understand your slang, and super, super awesome service.
It's easy for Amazon sellers to buy into that, by the way. I mean, like we also have members of the My Amazon Guy team in the Philippines, and they do better work than a lot of the Americans I could hire in equipment. Yeah,
definitely.
We need both. No qualms about using Philippines labor. Good for you on that. So keep going. So if somebody wants to hire you guys, they'll do an intro call. Anything else they need to know about if they wanted to hire you?
Yeah, no, I think that's really it. You know, just reach out to us, contact us. You can find our pricing on the Y Mobley page. And we break down everything. We're very transparent. You know, that's the name of the game. We want to give you control of your supply chain. So we're trying to be as transparent as possible throughout the entire process.
I mean, clearly with a founder such as yourself who told the stories that you did today, like you didn't pull any punches. I mean, you're like, man, there's freaking bribery. There's fraud. There's this crazy crap that goes on. Like there's cultural barriers. So I think your model, as you've described it, is easy to buy into. I mean, that authenticity and the transparency goes a long way. And it's also not only is it on brand comparable to my Amazon guy, it's also just a great brand to have in a very sometimes untransparent world over there. So good for you guys.
Thank you. Yeah. I always like to say, you know, it's we work so you can sleep at night. That's the goal. And that's where we're trying to get to.
There's a lot of sleepless nights going around right now, but I thought this selling on Amazon thing was passive income. It's just going to automate itself and work out nicely, right? So
that worked out pretty well.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the My Amazon Guy podcast. We really appreciate it. Again, that's Movly.com if you want to check them out to get your next inspection. That's the My Amazon Guy podcast. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button. This was the My Amazon Guy podcast with Stephen Pope. Each episode helps you grow your sales on Amazon through ideas on traffic and conversion rate improvements. Hit that subscribe button right now to tune in each week. And if you need more help, go to myamazonguy.com.